Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
How shaky is the New York Times? Last week, Moody's downgraded the New York Times Company's senior unsecured debt rating to junk bond status. And the richest man in Mexico, Carlos Slim, lent the Times $250 million at 14%, something they definitely didn't want to have to do. The Seattle Times has an editorial fretting over what Carlos Slim may want with the U.S.'s most respected newspaper. And The Atlantic magazine has an article this month wondering if the Times will be forced to stop publishing this May. Now, we should say that almost no one believes that scenario, but how shaky is the New York Times? And what does its condition mean for journalism, even democracy, in America? Let's talk to Michael Hirshhorn, author of that Atlantic article. He's a contributing editor to The Atlantic and works at VH1. And Rick Edmonds, media business analyst for the Poynter Institute, the nonprofit think tank and school for journalists. Thank you both very much for coming on. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you.
And
Good to be with you.
Michael Hirshhorn, I should say, welcome back. You've been here before to talk about other things. Michael, yes. What's the thing about May, and do you still believe it?
Well, I think, if you read my article, I think in literally the next sentence after I said May, I said the chances of that were slim. There was a little bit of a feeding frenzy that took place after my article came out, focusing on that line, which, you know, as somebody who has observed the internet for quite a while, I totally understand. At the time I wrote the article,
you did say it was plausible. I think you used that word.
It's plausible,
right?
And actually, it was plausible. And I think that the conditions that are taking place this year suggest that some kind of negative event continues to be plausible. And I'll tell you why. Since the article went to press, the Times was able to make some kind of accommodation, or was able to announce some kind of accommodation that gave it some flexibility on its debt. But the things that have happened since, as you've pointed out, suggest that there's a serious problem. And the real answer is, in this economy, we don't know. We don't know what ground is. We don't know if the conditions that are prevailing today will prevail tomorrow. We don't know how long this recession is going to last. On December 24th, the Times announced its November results, which showed that advertising revenue was down 20% year over year from the previous November. We'll see the December results, and we'll see the January results. And over the next few months, we'll have a sense of, you know, really, are the numbers that everybody is working off of actual numbers, or is the situation much worse?
Rick Edmonds, do you want to react first to the issue about May, or did he put that to rest for you?
Well, I suppose so. Yeah, I think I did a piece saying I don't think it is or was plausible, and that the Times really is in position to make that payment. On the other hand, they do have credit problems, maybe not as severe as some companies, but particularly the recent investment by Carlos Slim, I think, kind of underlines that.
Well, who is Carlos Slim, and what does he want with the New York Times, Rick Edmonds?
He is the richest man in Mexico. By some tallies, the richest man in the world. He's made most of his money in telecommunications, but now with a lot of other investments. And he has kind of a Warren Buffett-like touch in finding things that are good investments. He said he thinks the New York Times is a good investment, and that he has no particular ambitions to displace management, influence management, or particularly influence content in the New York Times itself.
Michael Hirshhorn, what do you think it means that he lent the Times $250 billion last week at 14% interest? 14%.
$250 million, not 250.
A million, of course, million. Yes.
I think it's remarkable. I think it's both a statement of the fact that the Times's debt, has been reduced to junk bond status, and so it's hard for the Times to get credit. And it's also a statement about, the desperate times that we're in, which are truly desperate. And it feels a little bit, like burning the furniture to keep the house warm. And yes, it might keep the Times afloat longer. And I should point out, there's no pleasure in this. I mean, this is a you know, really a horrible thing that's happening, and you know, every part of me hopes that it works out. I think that the simple thing that I wanted to do in my piece was kind of, you know, say, look at the pink elephant in the room. And, you know, there's a serious situation here. And I think subsequent events have borne that out. And I think that if you sort of everything is kind of flowing in the same direction, because you have these macro trends where really everything that can be digital will be digital. You have this astonishing recession that could become a depression. And you have some questionable strategic decisions made by the Times itself. But I think those are kind of micro points. The macro point is that there's a massive transformation happening, and where there once was a window, maybe of 5 years or 10 years or 15 years to make that transition. And I think the Times has done really commendable work on the web. I mean, they've done a terrific job. But that window is now closing very rapidly. And so I think any company that is not optimized for a digital future is going to have some serious problems.
Staying on the business question, before we get into the meaning of that kind of transition at the New York Times to journalism, even to democracy, Rick, the downgrading by Moody's to junk bond status of some of the Times' debt. What does that mean? When people hear New York Times junk bond status, they'll think, oh my God, because it's something that has junk bond status, you know, could be in danger of going into bankruptcy. Since you cover media business, what does junk bond status actually mean to a newspaper?
Well, I think it sounds a little more alarming than it is. I mean, keep in mind the New York Times company is a profitable business, certainly not as profitable as it was a year ago, but I'm guessing they'll report the year-end results tomorrow that they'll probably have operating profits together with their share of some joint ventures of around $100 million. So they're still very much in business. I think another point that is really unique to the Times is that they make a tremendous amount of money on circulation. They charge, down in my parts, $700 a year or more to get a subscription, and they got 800 million people who renew quite faithfully who pay that. So that's a pretty solid base for their print business that much of the rest of the industry doesn't have.
We can take a few phone calls on how shaky is the New York Times. Any Times employees want to call in? You don't have to use your real name. Or anyone else on the state of print journalism and what it might mean if the Times goes the way of, any other newspaper that has disappeared in this country, and there have been plenty of them, or if it just goes completely online, and we'll talk about that. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Before we get off Carlos Slim, we're too far away from him. There is an editorial from today in the Seattle Times that says the move is ominous, this 18% ownership stake that apparently he has. The Seattle Times editorial writes, the move is ominous. Ownership matters. Slim is a capitalist with a close connection to the Mexican state. He is buying a substantial stake in the most politically influential newspaper in the United States, and he easily has the wealth to buy the whole thing. Michael Hirschhorn, do you think this is ominous, or is the Seattle paper making too much of it?
No, I think so. I mean, I think it is a bit ominous because there's been a really laudable commitment to quality, and actually often at the expense of profitability on the part of the Times ownership. And, you know, when really all the great papers have benefited from, you know, a civic-minded ownership. So I think there is some reason for concern, sure.
Rick, do you agree?
I think it would be a bad business move to mess with the Times' very, very high quality and perceived quality. And if Mr. Slim's such a smart businessman, I don't think he's going to do that.
You know, our lead segment this morning was an investigative collaboration between WNYC and the nonprofit investigative journalism group ProPublica, a group that's funded by donations. Michael, if newspapers don't have the business model that's sustainable to go into the future and serve the function that they've served in the past, which, you know, among other things, is to be the prime engine of investigative reporting, both locally and nationally. Do you see a New York Times migration to an online entity threatening that role?
I think there's a legitimate cause for concern in whether there's the funding for the kind of long-term intensive reportage, you know, that might involve a lot of travel, that might involve months of work with the possibility of no return, because I think the institutional support has, you know, for that kind of open-ended investigation, as well as the credentials that allow access to high-level officials, is something that could be endangered and lost. And so I do think there's a threat there. However, I think, you know, the start of your question suggests that alternatives already are springing up. And I think that there's, you know, if you look at what happened with just one example, war coverage recently, some of the best reportage has come from unofficial sources, bloggers, you know, located in places that reporters cannot reach. And so I think the answer is complex. It's not, you know, something will be lost, but I think that something can be gained as well. And I think over time, models will and are spring up. You know, are springing up that will, in some ways, perhaps even be better. But definitely something will be lost.
Rick Edmonds, same question.
I agree. ProPublica is a terrific organization, and they seem to be doing good work. But that's a total budget of $10 million a year, and that takes up some of the slack, not all the slack. There are some encouraging startups, but I would have to say I don't see a real replacement of the best work that newspapers do. And as I look out around the country, just a lot of the basic work of covering cities, covering school boards, covering regions that are a little bit away from the central city, a lot of that's just melting away as we speak.
Right. I think that's kind of the point, is that I think Rick's completely right. It's kind of already happening. And, you know, the trends that we're discussing, that if many newspapers, you know, go online entirely, it's really just putting a kind of stamp on a trend that is already, or kind of ratifying a trend that has already been underway for quite some time.
We're asking, how shaky is the New York Times given some of its recent financial moves, like taking a $250 million, quarter of a billion dollar loan from Carlos Slim at 14% last week, and having some of its debt downgraded to junk bond status also last week by Moody's? 212-433-WNYC with Michael Hirshhorn, contributing editor to The Atlantic magazine. He has an article in this month's issue, which is titled ominously End Times, and said that it was plausible that the Times would actually stop publishing its print edition as early as this May when some debt came due. Now says that's no longer a major threat given this loan. And also with us, Rick Edmonds, media business analyst for the Poynter Institute, a nonprofit school for journalists and journalism think tank. Philip in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Philip.
Yes, hi. Very interesting program. I started out as an office boy for the New York Times when I was going to Columbia, working for Iphigenia Sulzberger. I knew Maya Berger, who wrote the book about the New York Times, and I've seen the development. My grandfather also was a printer there, so I always have had a familial interest in it. I think the New York Times has struggled like others, but it's keeping up with it. It's a tough one, but I think they'll surmount the difficulties and become not only the paper of record, as it was, but the digital record also. I think they do a fabulous job on it, and you're right about their computerization of their affairs have really come up well. I think they should look into going back into doing the Help Wanted in print, because I think that has an aspect that people would welcome again.
The classifieds, but the classifieds have so much migrated to Craigslist and places like that. But and Philip, thank you for your call. But Michael, your article has some stats about online readership versus copy sales. Let's share these with the listeners. About a million papers a day sold, about 20 million people a month looking at the Times website. That makes it look like the online edition is more than making up for newspaper readers lost. Does it translate?
I mean, I think the numbers, I think as Rick pointed out, he blogged a piece that was critical of mine, you know, and I thought that made some good points. The numbers clearly don't translate exactly, but I think that it's axiomatic and intuitive that the web has increased the reach of the Times and indeed of any piece of writing by multiple times. And I think that, you know, the fact that it causes people to read differently. You can buy the entire New York Times and only read three articles. Online, you're going to find the article you want to read, and then maybe you might go read something else. But it's really changing the way that we consume news. But for any individual piece of writing, I think it is axiomatic that the reach of that piece of writing has been increased multiple times.
Rick Edmonds, what do those numbers mean to you? And again, I know we're comparing papers sold to different people looking, papers sold per day to different people looking at the Times website per month. So it's about 1 million papers a day and about 20 million people a month. Would you say that more people, though, are now seeing the New York Times journalism online than in a physical newspaper? It looks like yes.
Well, I don't think so, actually, because, first of all, the copy sales, a typical copy is read by a couple of people, so that number increases right there. And a typical daily copy of the newspaper is read for about half an hour. The New York Times has the most time on site, but it averages out to about 35 minutes a month. So, you know, many of those visits are quick ones. They come via search. They may be for a single article or two. So I think the best reading time, and this is quite important for advertisers, the kind of time where people will page through and look at the ads, is still taking place in print. And that's one of the reasons why print still brings in about 85 to 90% of the advertising revenue, which is of course, the critical part of the business, even as it shrinks.
So even, yeah, I think, go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that I spent many years in the magazine business, and the kind of copies per reader metric was always one that kind of tended to go up and down as people felt it was useful for it to do, depending on who you were selling to. I think it's a notoriously tricky dance to see where, you know, where real readership is. I agree with Rick that clearly a print readership is more valuable. But I think that it is also clearly the case. I have friends who are foreign bureau chiefs, and just as a, you know, the reach of their articles in the countries in which they report has transformed their influence in those places, and I think has a profound geopolitical impact. You know, for example, if you're reporting from China and you can be read by 10 million people in China, that's very different than reporting from China and having your articles only read in the United States.
Here, by the way, if you've never heard Carlos Slim speak, now that he owns 10 going on 20% of the New York Times, here is Carlos Slim on MSNBC in October being asked about the paper.
Well, I think it's a great newspaper, the best of the world, a great brand. But the business is not paper, it's not a paper factory. It's a news factory. And the news are coming by other media.
And the news are coming by other media, says Carlos Slim. Interesting position to take when he's buying a stake in old media. But Mike on Staten Island, you're on WNYC.
Yeah, hi, how you doing?
All right.
Actually, Mr. Hirschhorn, I read your article. My friend emailed it to me about a week or so ago. It was pretty depressing. Because I actually just graduated this January with a major in journalism. And it was actually easier to find freelance work, you know, as an undergraduate. I mean, if the New York Times goes under, what hope is there for, you know, any journalism student?
Well, I think I share some of your downbeat feeling, but I think that there is a possibility, you know, if you pursue a career online, and I think that eventually everyone's going to have to make it or break it online. And I think, you know, for better or worse, blogging has emerged and will remain the dominant form of communication online. And I think that you know, there are quite a few people that are making a good living as bloggers, and there's some people that are making a great living as bloggers. And how those economic arrangements ultimately pan out is not entirely clear, but you can see some models for it emerging now, you know, with the Huffington Post, with Talking Points Memo, with my Atlantic colleague Andrew Sullivan, Mickey Kaus, many, you know, hundreds and hundreds, thousands of other people. And it is a way to make a living. It is a hard way to start out making a living, but I think that in time, this kind of work has value and it will be seen to have value.
What's the alternative? And Mike, good luck out there.
Yeah,
I do have one more point to bring up. Where would broadcast outlets get their stories from?
Where would broadcast outlets get their stories from? Which is a legitimate question, because so many broadcast outlets look at the New York Times every day and then decide where they're going to go for there, especially national broadcast outlets, sorry to say. But we'll take that as a rhetorical question. But, Michael, you mentioned the Huffington Post, and people are seeing the Huffington Post as possibly an alternative business model. But I think to the disadvantage of people like our last caller, who's a journalism student who wants to have a career, because it's by and large either very low paid or free work going into the Huffington Post. So what's the business model, and what does it actually mean for new original journalism as opposed to opinion?
Well, I think it's going to be brutal, because I think we can have a conversation about how we'd like things to be and whether there should be long-form investigative reporting, and the answer is, of course, it's yes. But the real question is, as you look at what the Internet is doing, really in a kind of like, almost kind of like a Sherman's March through media, really ripping up every business model to shreds, and the only one who's really benefiting right now is Google. In a real way, or Apple, and to a certain degree Amazon, is that the digital revolution, if you know, doesn't really care, and it may lay waste to a lot of media. It may wipe out certain segments of the population that are devoted to, you know, making a living creating words and pictures and video. Mm-hmm. And you know, the picture to me seems grim.
And so, Rick Edmonds, in our last 30 seconds, why can't the Google model work for the New York Times as more and more people get their journalism online, if they maintain their brand status as a global news leader and with credibility and with investigative reporting and et cetera? Why can't the Google model ultimately work for the New York Times and let it do what it continues, or let it continue to do what it does? That is, a lot of the online, you know, advertising on the page and that sort of thing.
Well, the companies have very different business models. Google really makes its money on search advertising, and part of the charm of search advertising, I mean, there are several things. It's fairly easy to buy. It has a automatic pricing mechanism, but the big thing is that it's targeted to whatever the individual user is looking for at that time, so it has kind of a premium value. And it doesn't really, strictly speaking, go along with content per se. It doesn't go along with the edited news content. So the New York Times is having to find new ways to monetize, either through advertising or through circulation. Some of their newer products, such as an edition that loads to a Kindle, are things that people will pay for rather than just the free web service. So they're groping for a variety of ways to find revenue streams for what they do so well.
Well, a story that obviously is not going away for any media outlet that might be considered old media, certainly that might be considered a newspaper, and as we've been hearing, even the New York Times is not immune. Rick Edmonds, media business analyst for the Poynter Institute. Michael Hirschhorn, contributing editor for The Atlantic. His piece in this month's issue is called End Times. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thanks. Good talking to you both.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in a minute, Bill Gates thinks he can wipe out malaria. Stay with us.